Okay, let's get started now. Thank you guys for joining us today for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program Opportunities in Social Sciences and the Humanities. Today, you'll be joined by me, Carlene Velez, and my colleague in New York, Aphrodita Krasnici. We are part of the Fulbright Outreach and Recruitment Team at the Institute of International Education. We are also very excited to have two alumni with us today. We have Mary Jo Lee, who was a Fulbright Scholar to China, and Paul Sarasik, who was a Fulbright Scholar to Japan. And you will hear more about them as the presentation goes along, but please know that the idea is that today's presentation will take up about 30 minutes of time, and then the last 30 minutes will be dedicated to questions and answers, either for us, the program staff, or for the alumni who are joining us today. So if you have questions, feel free to chat them at any point into the questions box, and we will get to the questions at the end of the presentation. Just to start out a little bit about Fulbright, the mission of Fulbright is to foster mutual understanding across nations and to advance knowledge across communities. It is the U.S. government's flagship international and educational exchange program that has been around since 1946, and it is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State. Fulbright is a program that really tries its best to promote diversity and inclusion. And we say this not just in name, but actually in all that we do. We actively recruit people who are from underrepresented audiences, whether it be working with institutions that are minority-serving institutions or encouraging people regardless of their national origin, religion, disability, sexual orientation, or any of the other categories that are somewhat underrepresented to apply to our program. The goal of Fulbright is to make sure that the Fulbright program represents the diversity of American society. Fulbright by numbers. Every year we award approximately 8,000 awards. And as you can see from the top of the list, about 800 of those go to U.S. scholars and administrators. So there are a wide variety of opportunities that are available to both scholars, administrators, and professionals. We also have a large group of visiting scholars, U.S. students who go abroad, foreign students who come to study for graduate school here in the U.S., and foreign language teaching assistants. To date, we have about 390,000 Fulbrighters who have participated in the program, making you a part as a Fulbrighter of a very large and very powerful network. The distribution of awards changes year by year, but if you look at the pie graph right here, you can see that a majority of, or the largest group of awards that are awarded are teaching and research awards. We also offer about 28% research awards, 17% teaching awards, and then awards to administrators and to postdoctoral scholars. This percentage is not the same every year because many awards allow you to choose the activity that you would like to participate in. Many people say, well, is one activity more preferred than the other? And the answer is no. You can choose an activity that you would like to engage in while on a Fulbright that best matches your professional profile and your own personal goals. The basic eligibility for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program is that you need to be a U.S. citizen. If you are a green card holder, unfortunately, you are not eligible at this time, but if you naturalize, then you are immediately eligible for the Fulbright Program. And after that, everything depends on the award. So most awards require a PhD or terminal degree, but there are also many opportunities that require a master's and higher education teaching experience or professionals that have a significant amount of experience in the field. So you will need to look at the award description for the exact details of the requirements. It's important that you find a Fulbright that works for you. What I love the best about the Fulbright program is that it can serve you throughout your career. So you can start in the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program as a postdoctoral student, and you can be a part of the Fulbright Scholar Program up through retirement when you become an emeriti scholar. We also have many flexible options that allow you to make multiple visits to a country over a two-year period. If you want to know more about that, you can reach out to us directly. And then we have global and regional awards that allow you to visit multiple countries at one time. It's important when you are trying to decide which award to apply for that you take the time to select the right award. What is important is that you match your expertise and experience to what it is the award is looking for. Also that your career level matches what they are asking for. Because you are allowed to only apply for one award per competition cycle, it's important that you take the time to select the award for which you will be the strongest candidate. And the advising staff at IIE is willing to help you work with you to decide among a couple awards if you are trying to figure out the best match for your professional profile. Okay, now I would like to take a few moments and introduce our alumni. So the first alumni spotlight that we have is Mary Jo Lee, who is an adjunct assistant professor at South Dakota. Mary Jo, can you please take a couple minutes and talk a little bit about your project and your experience in educational sociology in China, please?
Yes, thank you so much, Carleen. I was a scholar to China in the 2016-2017 academic year, and I worked at the Research Institute of Higher Education at Yunnan University. My primary responsibilities were teaching two classes. I taught qualitative research methods, and I taught a class called Academic Writing for the Social Sciences. So my project title was Training the Next Generation of China's Educational Ethnographers. So my primary roles there were teaching. But while I was there, I was also able to do research in my area of interest, which is ethnic minority education. And furthermore, I was able to build ties between Yunnan University, where I was a Fulbright scholar, and also the neighboring university, Yunnan Normal Universities, to build ties between those schools and my home university, which is South Dakota State. So that's what I did during my Fulbright year. You ask us also to talk about a little bit about the impacts of the Fulbright on ourselves. So impacts, just amazing. Fulbright is absolutely life-changing. Because of my Fulbright, I am now a member of a 16-person research team at Yunnan University, and we are working on a project called New Trends in Ethnic Minority Education in the Globalized World. So I would never have had that opportunity without Fulbright. At the other university, Yunnan Normal University, I've been able to create, with the help of a lot of others, an exchange relationship between the early childhood education program at Yunnan Normal and the early childhood education program at South Dakota State University. So we've had a visit from the Yunnan Normal University early childhood faculty here. We've also taken faculty to Yunnan Normal last summer, participated in early childhood education conference, and so we've been able to build those ties as a result of my Fulbright experience. And last November, November of 2019, I spent a month at Yunnan Normal University teaching qualitative methods and also continuing on with my research on ethnic minority education. So Fulbright is absolutely amazing, and I'm so thankful for having had that experience.
Thank you so much, Mary Jo, for sharing about your experience in China. Now I'd like to move on to the next alumni, Paul Sarasik, who is a political science professor and chair at Youngstown State University. Paul, can you tell us a little bit about your Fulbright opportunity and your experience?
Yeah, it's going to be hard to keep it to 5 minutes, but because it really was such an amazing, you know, people say life-changing experience is almost cliche, but I mean, in my case, you know, I've had two Fulbrights, right? So I'm a little bit unusual. My first was in 2009, 2010, and my last one was 2018, 2019. both times in Tokyo, Japan. But, you know, before I had my first Fulbright, you know, I was an American politics specialist. I actually never left the continent. I didn't have a passport, hadn't traveled abroad. Since then, I think I've been to a dozen countries, given lectures all over the world. I'm on CNN International. I'm the political analyst for NHK World Japan. So it really is sort of a different life post-Fulbright than pre-Fulbright. You know, my first Fulbright, because it was such a life-changing experience, I wish I could share this sort of wonderful story with you about how I decided to pursue a Fulbright for the first time. And, you know, I have some versions of this story, none of which are true. You know, one of which is that I met J. William Fulbright, which is true. I did meet him. I was a TA in a class that he guest lectured in the 1980s. But that really didn't influence my choice. I don't know why I decided to pursue a Fulbright. But I suspect, and this may ring true for some of you, it was because of my children. I have two daughters. And at the time when I applied for my first Fulbright, they were in sixth. They were about to enter sixth and eighth grade, and I wanted them to have somewhat of an international experience, and that was one of the reasons that I pursued it. And for them, it really was as much of a life-changing experience as it was for me. You know, my youngest daughter, who was entering sixth grade at the time. Well, what happened when we went to Tokyo is we put them both in international schools because they didn't speak any Japanese. And, you know, if your kids are really, really young, then you can put them, I think you can immerse them, you know, in a program and they can learn the language. My kids were a little bit, you know, beyond that. So we put them in an international school, which, you know, for my youngest, kind of introduced her to international education, to, you know, living abroad, to the Japanese language. She ended up recently completing a four-year degree at Waseda University in Tokyo. So she actually took a four-year degree at a Japanese university, is heading off to law school next year. For my oldest, who always did really well in school, but you know, we come from, you know, we live in Ohio, in a small place in Ohio. She's now in medical school, and you know, what she told me afterwards was that she kind of knew that she was smart and she, you know, good at sciences and math, but being at an international school showed her that she could compete with, you know, students, top students from all over the world, and really gave her the sense of confidence that led her to go forward and achieve the things that she's done. So the Fulbright experience, you know, if you have a family and you're bringing them with you, is not just about you. It's also going to change, you know, their lives quite a bit. You know, I think some of the Fulbright is kind of what you make of it. Both of my awards were teaching awards, but I ended up doing a lot of research on both of them. Fulbright opens up so many opportunities for you. I know, and I don't know how it is in some other countries, but in Japan at least, there are so many people who have traveled from Japan to the United States on Fulbrights. So there's an active Fulbright network in Japan that you can sort of become part of when you're a Fulbrighter. And it allowed me to meet so many people, sort of, you know, CEOs of major companies, you know, top politicians, you know, media people. And those, that kind of networking, you know, leads to all sorts of different writing and research opportunities. You know, I've written pieces on U.S.-Japan relations now, you know, for, you know, journals like, you know, The Atlantic and places like that, you know, CNN. You know, I can speak authoritatively now on U.S.-Japan relations, even though I was an Americanist, in part because I know so many people in the Japanese government, and it's led to so many exchanges with my university, and my university really appreciates that, that once you make those connections, now you've got people you can bring over. You know, I just brought somebody from the Japanese Foreign Ministry to my university to speak on U.S.-Japan relations. I've done it almost every year since I've been there. And I travel regularly now back and forth between Japan and the United States. You know, I got back from my last Fulbright August 1st, but I was just back there in early February for a few weeks, actually doing NHK World and, you know, giving lectures in Japan. So again, it's just, it's a completely different life. It opens up so many opportunities. There's so much more I could talk about. I don't want to talk for too long. I'd be happy to answer your questions. But really, really, if you're thinking about applying for a Fulbright, it really is just an amazing opportunity for you and anyone you bring with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul, for sharing your experiences and hopefully allowing the audience to see just how transformative a Fulbright can be for not only you but your family. What we're going to do now is we're going to actually go through all of the different world regions, highlighting some awards that are particularly relevant for scholars in the social sciences and humanities. And so as we go through, we are going to go through them somewhat rapidly because we want to leave plenty of time for questions and answers at the end. But please jot down the name of the award if you'd like to hear more. We have an email address on the right corner of every slide. And if you have a question about an award on that particular slide, please reach out to that regional inbox. We share those amongst ourselves so that we can make sure that we're always responding to inquiries that come in. So let's start off in the East Asia and the Pacific region. There are two awards in Australia that I'd like to highlight. The first one is the Distinguished Chair in Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at the Australian National University. This is for senior academics, associate, or full professor in level, and it is for research only, and it must begin in the spring. The nice thing is that this is open to people in these disciplines right here. So you're cutting out STEM people and some of the other competitors that you might have in other awards. The next thing that is unique about Australia is that they have quite a few postdoctoral scholar awards. And in fact, this one All Disciplines Award is for Deakin University. What I'd like to point out is that for many Fulbright awards, the postdocs are defined generally by people who have graduated within the last 5 years. And I know that changes. Some people have a little bit shorter of a time frame, but for this Deakin postdoc, they have to have graduated within the last 5 years. So if you happen to be an early career scholar who might possibly get a junior leave as you're working towards tenure, some of these postdoc opportunities might be ideal for you because you are, again, not competing with senior scholars, you're only competing with people who've graduated within the last 5 years. Please note that for these awards to Australia, they do want you to make a personal statement as part of your overall project statement, but you can read about all of those details in the award description. Moving on to Korea, there's a distinguished lectureship at Yonsei University. Many people I know want to teach at Yonsei University, but this award is the only opportunity to do it at that particular institution. Yonsei University does want someone who is more advanced in their career, so you must be a full professor with tenure at the time of your application and a record of scholarships and publications. I do want to add, for not only this award to Korea, but for all of the awards to Korea, Korean Americans should carefully read the award descriptions for eligibility requirements. So again, Korean Americans might want to refer to that and reach out if you have questions. The Philippines has an interesting award, the U.S.-Philippines Relations Award, which is open to scholars who study U.S.-Philippines relations. There is a preference for people in economics, education, American history, non-U.S. history, journalism, and political science. The one caveat of this award is that the award, your research must be comparative in nature. For Taiwan, the award to Taiwan, it is in arts, education, humanities, professional fields, and social sciences. They have an award for scholars early and more advanced, more senior scholars, but they also, I would like to highlight this postdoc award. For this one, you have to have graduated within the last 3 years to be eligible for this postdoc award, and they are particularly looking for scholars who can support certain initiatives that are relevant in Taiwan, including the Indigenous Peoples Initiative, the English Education Project, Cross Straits Project, and Arts and Culture. Vietnam has an all-disciplines award in teaching or teaching and research that is open to all people in the humanities and social sciences and will allow you to work in Vietnam at a variety of institutions. And then the final award in the EAP region that I'd like to highlight is the Cross Straits Study Project. This is an award that will allow you to conduct research in the area of specialization on contemporary topics concerning the relationship between mainland China and Taiwan. The exciting thing about this award is that your time is split between China and Taiwan, with short-term research trips to Hong Kong possible, but you are able to split your time between these two countries as you pursue your research. They're particularly interested in comparative politics, dispute settlement, diplomacy, environmental studies, free trade agreement, and regional economic integration, international law and relations, negotiation, and regional security. Okay, now we'll move on to my colleague Aphrodita, who can highlight some awards to Europe.
Thank you, Carlene, and hi, everyone. So nice to co-host this webinar with Carlene and our two wonderful alums. I hope everyone is doing well. So I would like to discuss the opportunities we have in social sciences and humanities in the largest region in the Fulbright US Scholar Program, Europe and Eurasia. And these are just some of the opportunities we highlight here. And if you have any questions, like follow-up questions about more opportunities or these opportunities, just write to us at europeeurasia@iie.org, and we will get back to you as soon as possible. So first award I would like to highlight is the new award we have in Albania in the Balkans in public administration. So this is a professional project in combination with teaching. So it's a 5 months high-profile award. So if you would like to really work with those policy-making individuals and offer policy-making training, this is a great opportunity. So you would be working directly with a state school, Albanian School for Public Administration. Another great opportunity in Austria, the Fulbright Diplomatic Academy visiting professor of international studies. This is a combination of teaching and research in one of the oldest professional schools in the world, so Vienna School of International Studies. And another caveat to this is that letter of invitation is optional, so you don't need to even get in touch with them. You just, you know, put your proposal together, and then you will also, you know, you don't need to reach out to anyone there, basically, to get the letter of invitation. Other great opportunities we have in Europe, and this is in Belgium, the NATO Security Studies. As probably many of you know about NATO, this is an opportunity to conduct research or combination of teaching and research in international relations, international security studies, transatlantic studies, NATO security studies. So this would be conducted at a European university or think tank, and some of the most popular institutions include College of Europe in Bruges in Belgium, or at the also Brussels office of the German Marshall Fund. So this is a great opportunity if you do work in security studies, especially related to military or NATO. This is great. The other very specific to Europe opportunity within the European Union countries, we have the Fulbright-Schumann Awards, and these are three different options depending on the level, career level. We offer the Chair Distinguished the Distinguished Chair Award, which is for teaching or research about U.S.-EU relations. So they're looking more for senior level of scholars in the security studies. And this would be in Italy, in Florence, at the European University there, European University Institute in Florence. The other also opportunity within the EU is the postdoc opportunity. So they would give this to those who just finished their PhD as an opportunity to do research at the European University Institute in Florence within economics, history, law, political science, or sociology. The other great opportunity within the European Union, the program or the award, is the EU Affairs, which is to conduct research in EU affairs in one or two European Union countries. So you really have to be careful about these EU countries, and they really have to be part of the EU in order to conduct this research. So a PhD is not required for this one, and it is open to all level of scholars. Moving on to Iceland, we have the Fulbright Ministry of Foreign Affairs Arctic Scholar Opportunity. The scholar may be affiliated with the University of Iceland Center for Arctic Policy Studies, the University of Akureyri Polar Law Program, or the other Arctic program. So The other special benefit to this award is also they do support applicants with disabilities. They will provide an additional stipend for applicants with disabilities. So moving on with Italy, which has the distinguished chair in law at the University of Trento, this opportunity is for applicants who focus on comparative and international law. So this is more for a senior level of scholars who have 10 or more years of teaching and research experience. Going to the Balkans in North Macedonia, we have this specific opportunity in rule of law, judicial reform, and civil society. So you can affiliate with any appropriate institution there. You can affiliate with maybe private or state universities, but the affiliation will be determined by the U.S. Embassy in Skopje, who manages the program on the ground. But applicants definitely should indicate their preference. So the other, moving on to Norway, the Advanced International Studies with the Nobel Institute. This is like the Nobel Institute, one of the Norway's most prestigious and highly respected institutions. So it would be a great opportunity to conduct research there in international studies. And the other opportunity in Norway that we have is focusing on international courts and tribunals. So Poland has a very unique opportunity. A distinguished chair in East European and Eurasian Studies at Center for East European Studies at the University of Warsaw. So they would provide like some additional features here, enrichment opportunities. They have some language learning opportunities and even a teaching assistant to support you with your teaching activities. Two more opportunities in Europe I would like to highlight here is Portugal, the Fulbright Award in Law at the University of Minho. It teaches the course called Free Seminars to the LLM in European and Transglobal Business Law. The last one here that I would like to highlight is the opportunity in Sweden at the Lund University Chair in Public International Law. So this scholar would teach at the master's level in human rights, international law, international organizations, and many other opportunities. So thank you, Carleen.
Thank you, Aphrodita. Now I will continue with some of the awards to the Middle East and North Africa. What you'll find not only in this region, but all other regions, are these awards that are called All Discipline Awards. And you are eligible to apply for any of these All Disciplines Awards. Just know that they are open to all scholars in all fields, so you will be competing with a wider range of scholars, but they still are very exciting opportunities that are accessible to people in the humanities and social sciences. In Bahrain, the award is for 10 months, and it does include all activity types. It allows you to really immerse yourself into that into the culture because of the longer award, and it's particularly applicable for people in educational fields and economics, which are some of their priorities. Egypt is open to all activity types, and they also have a flex option, which allows you to take multiple shorter visits to Egypt. And professionals are welcome to apply for this award as long as you meet the requirements in the award description. I'd like to highlight Israel. There are 9 awards that are open to all levels of scholars, including postdocs. And within the humanities and social science, you should really look at these awards. The postdoc awards are unique because they allow you to stay for up to 2 years as a postdoctoral scholar. And for the other All Disciplines Awards, there are some awards that are sponsored by institutions, for example, Haifa, but there are other awards that are in the All Disciplines category that do require a financial donation if you receive an award from the institution. And so that's a conversation that you would need to have as you're getting the invitation letter, but I'd be happy to answer questions that you have, and they also have a contact at the Fulbright office in Israel who can help you. Jordan is another country that's open to all activity types, and they have a preference for people in archaeology, communications, English language and literature, film studies, linguistics, migration studies, public and global health, and religious studies. Qatar is available for teaching or teaching research awards with placements at two institutions in Doha. They have a preference for many fields in the social sciences and humanities, so you might want to look at that, but they're not limited to, but they include early childhood education, special education, technology in the classroom, law, arts education, physical education, political science, and international relations. Tunisia is the last all disciplines award that I'll be highlighting today, but please know that there are many other awards in the awards catalog that we're just not presenting. In Tunisia, they also offer the flex option, which is wonderful, and you do want to look at the awards description because there is a contact at the U.S. Embassy who's very responsive if you need help finding an affiliation in Tunisia. The Middle East and North Africa region also wants to increase their applicants in the field of TEFL, applied linguistics, or education. So there are three awards, Algeria, Jordan, and the Palestinian territories that are all seeking people in the field of TEFL, applied linguistics, and education. For Algeria, the people who are possibly not linguists, but maybe composition instructors, this is an appropriate award for them because they do want also composition teachers. And this would be appropriate if you teach multilingual speakers, often just in the context of your own job as a composition teacher. For Jordan, even though the award is TEFL and applied linguistics, they actually are also open to theoretical linguists who might want to teach on, like, example, phonology, morphology, syntax. They can also apply. And then in the Palestinian territories in West Bank, they are also interested in scholars who would be willing to assist with curriculum development and provide some training workshops. If you are in the field of TEFL, applied linguistics and education, you could also apply to Bahrain and Oman in the all disciplines category because they listed these as preferences as well. Okay, over to you, Aphrodita, to talk about South and Central Asia.
Thank you, Carlene. So moving on to South and Central Asia, and here, again, like Carlene highlighted, we do have most of these countries offer multiple disciplines or so many variety of disciplines. Just make sure that your discipline is also highlighted in among those disciplines, and that's how you find out if you're a good match as a first check. So Bhutan offers this wonderful opportunity in teaching for 10 months. So this is a one full academic year. And PhD is not required and open to multidisciplines, including some of the social sciences and humanities. Kazakhstan has the all discipline or multiple discipline award, which is 5 to 10 months. You can do research only, teaching only, or combination of both in variety of disciplines. Maldives has 3 to 4 months professional project as a new opportunity, and then teaching and a combination of teaching and research at Maldives National University. Tajikistan offers teaching or teaching and research combined for 4 to 9 months. So it could be one semester or two semesters at a University of Central Asia, Technological University of Tajikistan, and many other universities within the country. Flex option is available also. Flex option is multiple visits in the country within the span of 2 years. So we'll cover that later. And in the interest of time, I will try to speed this up because I know you're also curious to learn more about how to become a competitive scholar and what it takes to become a competitive Fulbrighter. Turkmenistan, it offers the scholar to be placed in one of the universities in Ashgabat, which is the capital city, and English is the medium of instruction. Uzbekistan offers teaching, professional project, or teaching and research for 4 to 9 months. And what I would like to highlight here is India. India is the largest country that offers the largest amount of grants, 42 grants in all disciplines. They have this amazing opportunity called Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Awards. So make sure to check this out if your project makes sense and is feasible in India. idea. So PhD is not required. It's 4 to 6 months. You can do professional project as well, plus teaching and research in all disciplines. Nepal has the Old Discipline Award, and this is 5 or 7 months of teaching and research combined. And the last one here I would like to highlight is the Multi-Country South and Central Asia Regional Research Program. So you can do research in any discipline, and you can do this focus work where data must be collected in 2 or 3 countries within the region. So it could be from the dozens of countries in the region. And then in addition to this, in this region, South and Central Asia, they do offer also an opportunity for travel grant where during the grant period, if you're selected, you can apply for additional regional travel grant to engage in a variety of activities at academic institutions in one of these countries in SCA. Thank you, Carlene. Moving on.
Okay, thank you. Let's go on to Sub-Saharan Africa. I wanted to highlight that many of the awards to Sub-Saharan Africa are 10-month awards, though we have a few awards, for example, to Ghana and Malawi that are 5 months, so 1 or 2 semester awards. And Uganda has a professional project program option that will allow you to go for a shorter period of time. But in the All Disciplines Awards, the ones that are most open to people in the humanities or social sciences are Burkina Faso, especially in the field of English for American Studies and Linguistics. Some French fluency is required if you are teaching in a field other than American Studies or Linguistics. So you would need some French fluency for that one. Malawi, in particular, is looking for TEFL Gender Studies, Economics, Education, Public Policy, Public Administration, and Law. English is sufficient for those awards. Mozambique does require that you have some Portuguese language skills to apply for those awards, and that you have college teaching experience, whether that be at a community college or a four-year institution. Sudan is really open to all projects in all disciplines, and there is no language requirement. However, some knowledge of Arabic is helpful if you have that. Again, Uganda is open to all disciplines. The one thing that you want to take note of in the award to Uganda is that they have specific host institutions listed, and there are different disciplines that each host institution is a better match for. So you would want to look at your discipline and see if there's a particular host institution that might be a good match. Zimbabwe also has an All Disciplines Award in teaching and research. The regional project that I'd like to highlight is the Africa Regional Research Project. It allows you to go to 1 or more countries in the Sub-Saharan Africa region. So if you want to go to a country that only has a 10-month All Disciplines Award and you do not have 10 months to go, then you could look at the Africa Regional Research Project for options to go for shorter periods of time. This allows you to conduct research in 1 to 3 countries over 4 to 6 months if you're using the flex option, or 5 to 9 months if you're doing a continuous research project in the Africa region. Okay, and finally, we'll end with West Hemisphere with Aphrodita.
Thank you, Carlene, and again, thank you to everyone who has been putting some great questions in our chat box, and we'll get to them later. We're trying to respond to some of the questions, but we appreciate your patience. So moving on with Western Hemisphere, which also offers great opportunities, like in Brazil, the studies of the U.S. at the Federal University of Minas Gerais. It's a 4 months that offers also the flex option, and it's open to more senior level of scholars to do combination of teaching and research. Canada has some amazing chairs, like the research chairs in arts, humanities, and culture, and it's a 4 month teaching and research or research only, and sometimes scholars can seek an unfunded extension for additional 8 months, and this is also for the other two awards, this applies for the other two awards as well. And this research chair in North American Studies is, again, an opportunity to do teaching and research, or research only in transnational studies, Canada and U.S. relations, and North American Studies at Brock University or Carleton University for 4 months. And then you can extend if you have an interest for an unfunded period of time. The other opportunities, the research chairs in Indigenous Studies, which is a very unique opportunity of 4 months to do the teaching and research or research only in one of the four different universities. So you have to pick one of them in Canada to conduct this work there. Chile has a great opportunity in social sciences, humanities, and education. And again, like Carleen mentioned, we're going to send you a follow-up message with this webinar recording and the PowerPoint, so you will have all the links to these awards there, and you will be able to explore them further, because in the interest of time, we're not giving a lot of detail for every award. In Mexico, the U.S. Studies Professorship and Chair. So, and then the last one is Canada and Mexico. This is a multi-country award. Again, like we mentioned, you can apply to only one country per application cycle, with few exceptions, like, for example, this one, Canada and Mexico, or like the EU awards that I mentioned earlier, where you can do these awards in two countries. But the general rule is for the other awards, you can apply to only one, unless specified, like in this case, it's a two-country award, Fulbright Carlos Rico Award for Northern American Studies. This offers an unparalleled opportunity to conduct research in both Canada and Mexico. So the aim of this award is to enhance collaboration between North American scholars working on projects of importance to Canada, Mexico, and the United States. So, thank you for your attention. Moving on to the next slide, I would like to show you a little bit more about how to understand these awards, because we understand, if we can go back one slide where we have the screenshot, thank you so much, understanding the awards. So let's say you are interested in one of these awards. For example, here we have Taiwan, and you open the web page and you open the award page, and here you will see the name and then the country and what region it represents, but then you will see, we highlighted in red here, there are four tabs. All the most important and crucial information will be found here. Award details, like specifics, whether it's teaching, research, the profile of the scholar, whether it's for early career, for senior level of scholars, etc. And the location will be found there. Under the second tab, the award requirements, here you will find out if the letter of invitation is required or not. In many cases, it would say the letter of invitation is required or should not be sought or is optional, etc. The third tab, stipend and benefits, is where you learn how much you would be getting in monthly stipends. Usually they are broken down by month. Sometimes some awards have them by year or by the academic year, depending on the award, but every award has different specifics. So make sure you read all this carefully before you make the final decision what award you want to apply to. And the last tab is the country area overview, is where you will find out more information about this country, what are some of the priorities in the country. And there you will see also your discipline, whether it is in one of those priorities. On the right-hand corner here, you see Begin Application Process. So when you click there, it will take you to another page in our website, and we can move on to the next slide. So it will take you to this checklist, where what is required as part of the application. So here you will see, for example, this year we will require only two letters of recommendations, because traditionally three letters were required. So this year this is a new thing, and we only two letters will be sufficient. And when you check all the checklist, you will learn what it is for every component that you need to fill out. We have instructions. We even have project statement samples for you to see how the successful Fulbrighters put in, what did they put in their project statement that, you know, made them stand out. Moving on to the next slide. just to emphasize and elaborate a little bit on the project statement, because this is a crucial part of your application, where you need to describe your project in 3 to 5 pages. So it cannot be 2 pages, it cannot be 6 pages, only from 3 to 5 pages where you emphasize what you plan to do, how you plan to do this, how you plan to teach, whether what are the goals of this research and the methods of teaching, etc. So you need to also explain the impact that you will have on the hosts and also the home institution and also in you. It is important. How will this Fulbright affect you, and what are some of the benefits you're gaining from this? The new feature we have this year is the supplemental questions. So in addition to the project statement, you will be required to answer why Fulbright in 1,000 characters. And then why this country, 2,000 characters. In addition, we want to hear from you. How adaptable are you? If you've lived abroad and you can work well with other cultures, with other scholars, please make sure that you explain this here. And then how will you adapt your materials to the host culture, to the host country? Make sure you're proactive about this. You send this to the host prior to submitting the application and see if this syllabi or if the bibliography makes sense to them, if it is feasible. Make sure that you adjust your teaching syllabi or the research according to their needs. This is what makes you makes your application stand out. Moving on. So now we get to questions. Carlene, I think you're taking this over.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to actually start with the questions. We're running a little bit late on time. We have about 12 minutes left, but I'd like to work with some of the questions that the alumni, or that people have asked for the alumni. So let me go through and get my question. I just have my question box in front of me, and it's disappeared. Aphrodita, if you have access to the questions, can you begin?
Yes, I can. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yes, of course. So let's see. We have so many great questions, and thank you so much for these wonderful questions. I tried to answer some of the questions, and let me just get to the alumni
question. The questions for our alumni, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see. Because I know there was, from what I remember, there was a question about the language, how adaptable, or did they need to speak the language? So maybe we can go with that one first.
Yeah, Carlene? That's great. Uh-huh. Paul, can you tell us about your experiences with the language?
Sure. I spoke no Japanese before I began my Fulbright, and after 2 Fulbrights, unfortunately, I speak very little Japanese. So it's, you know, in my case, it wasn't necessary. Frankly, I was a little bit frustrated that I didn't have more of an opportunity to sort of learn Japanese or study it. But in my case, just found that we were so busy, so many English language lectures. But, you know, again, I also found that, you know, my hosts were so helpful with everything. You know, again, remember, Fulbright often goes in 2 directions. So we go to other countries, but other countries come to us, and in many cases, in my experience, was that my faculty liaison at the university I was teaching was a former Fulbright scholar to the United States, so their English was quite good. And I mean, it is difficult if you are awarded, you know, a Fulbright and you're doing a teaching Fulbright. You have to realize one of the skills you develop is how to speak to people for whom English is their second language. And that is, you know, difficult sometimes, I think, for faculty. But, you know, in my case at least, and, you know, the experts can tell you for the different countries, not having any Japanese before I went was not a problem at all.
Thank you, Paul. And Mary Jo, the next question goes over to you. It says, I'm interested in hearing the mechanics of conducting research while on a teaching grant. It seems that both of you had to do it, or that both of you were able to do it. So Mary Jo, can you talk about the mechanics of that, please?
Sure. I had worked in China twice before my Fulbright. So going back to the 1990s, I had been working with pre-service teachers, ethnic minority teachers, and the influence of ethnic identity on their studies and on their careers. So I had an ongoing research project in mind before I went to China on my Fulbright. So certainly my emphasis was on my teaching at Yunnan University, but Fulbright is very restrictive in terms of how many hours you can spend in the classroom. Actually, I believe the requirement was actually no more than 4 hours of teaching a week in the classroom, and I think I actually appealed and taught perhaps 6 hours a week in the classroom. So you have a lot of time when you're not teaching, and that is very deliberate on the part of Fulbright. Fulbright wants you to be out in the community doing other things, being who you are. And so I had time to work with my research partner at the other university, and we laid the groundwork for a follow-up study of pre-service ethnic minority students that we'd started in the 1990s. So while we didn't advance necessarily as quickly or as substantially on that project as I thought maybe going in, it was still an important opportunity to work with her again and to lay the groundwork for what we were going to do in the future. And in fact, we got together again last November and continued on with our work, which we hope will be a follow-up to the book that we did in the early 2000s together. So it was not difficult at all to make time for that.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you very much. Yeah, sorry. Thank you. I just had my mute on. There's another question that maybe you guys can talk about. There's someone who is a full professor who has only one semester paid sabbatical, and they were wondering how you covered the second semester. So I'm wondering if any of you can talk about the leave negotiations that you had with your institutions that might give these scholars ideas on how it might be possible for them to take leave from their institution. Paul, do you want to start?
I was fortunate in that we're a unionized campus, and we have every 7 years we have a 90% sabbatical, paid sabbatical, and so the money was there. But convincing universities that leaving for a year is valuable can be a problem, even when you're eligible for these kinds of things. But it really, there are some great arguments you can make. As I told you in my own presentation, every year now I bring in Japanese visiting scholars from major Japanese universities to speak to students. If you're teaching somewhere, like Ohio, right, which isn't on the coast, so you don't have a lot of interaction with the world, particularly my students are mostly first-generation students. It is so valuable to them to be able to kind of reach out to the world. One of the things I did when I was in Japan, and I've done this twice now, is do kind of an international classroom because of the kind of video conferencing that's available to us now, the technology, and almost every university has it, both abroad and here. You can run sort of, I ran a classroom where I had my students in Ohio meet with my students in Japan, and actually the U.S. Embassy facilitated that, and it was really, a great class. It's tough if you're in Asia to do it with a time difference and everything, but, you can tell your university about these kinds of international classrooms. You can set up the scholars that come over. It really is, kind of worth its weight in gold, and if you can do some of the things that I did, networking into other sort of media opportunities, again, this is a tremendous amount of free publicity for your universities that they normally have to pay for. And in, our currently competitive environment, that's also valuable. So I would emphasize, all those things. And honestly, I'm pretty easy to find online. I'd be glad to help you, with that if you're looking for arguments to make.
Thank you, Paul. Let's go through another question. It says, does Fulbright prefer to select scholars who have not already spent significant amount of time in the destination country? Are there any restrictions to people who have lived in the country before or had a Fulbright there before? And the answer to that question is just that it does depend. There are occasionally comments in the award description that say preference is given to people who have not spent a significant amount of time in the country, but it is possible that people who perhaps conducted dissertation research there want to go back and continue it, you know, 10 years later, and that is also, it's possible for them to get awards. So that does depend country by country. Okay, let me find some more awards that are questions that are that possibly our alumni can answer, since we can answer a lot of your questions through our advising information on the award description, and I want to make sure that we can take advantage of our alumni who are here right now. Did either of you alumni have to get a letter of invitation for your awards?
This is Paul. I did not need one. Again, it's different country to country, but it specifies, I think, in the one for Japan, that you basically, you know, ask to be placed at certain universities. And in my case, I was placed. I had asked for University of Tokyo the first time, and I was placed there. And I had asked for Waseda University the second time, and I was placed there. So Fulbright did a really nice job of putting me where I wanted to go. But I didn't need a letter of invitation from that university. In fact, they told you not to do that for Japan.
Okay, and Mary Jo, did you have one?
My situation was exactly the same. The award said do not request a letter of invitation. However, that said, I had a very particular interest in being at Yunnan University. My project was very focused on ethnic minority education in Yunnan, which is China's most diverse province. So I really wanted to be at Yunnan University, but no, the award specifically said do not request a letter of invitation.
All right, thank you so much. For those people asking about letters of invitation, you have different options in the award description, whether they're optional, whether they're preferred, or whether they're required or should not be sought. If they are preferred or required, you can go about getting a letter of invitation a number of ways. First, you can look through the Fulbright Scholar Directory and see if there have been any visiting scholars in your discipline to that country and possibly reach out to them to try to start building connections. You can also get a letter of invitation from a colleague you have abroad or by looking at the different university websites in the country you're hoping to go to and trying to reach out to possible colleagues or contacts at that university to see if they're interested in working with you. Some award descriptions do provide contact names at the Fulbright offices or the U.S. Embassy, and they can help you get a letter of invitation, or you could reach out to us and we can see if we can try to help facilitate that process. But if you do need a letter of invitation, I recommend trying to start that process sooner rather than later, because in the summer months, some universities or institutions are not around, and it's harder to get the letters of invitation before the deadline of September 15th. So it looks like we hit 3:00. There are many more questions here that have not been answered. I apologize that we were not able to get to all of your questions. Please know that this webinar will be archived, and you can go back and listen to it. But if you have any other specific questions about syllabi, about invitations, about eligibility, please reach out to that email address or the contact person on the award in the country that you're interested in, or contact us for an advising session to try to determine the best fit for you. Really, our goal at IIE is to help you submit as strong of an application as possible, and we look forward to working with you through that process. Thank you very much for joining us today. Aphrodita, do you have any other parting comments?
Thanks, Carlene. I really enjoyed all the wonderful questions and also hearing from experiences from our wonderful alumni. And thanks again for joining us, and I hope everyone is staying well and taking care of each other and themselves. So looking forward to receiving your applications, or in the meantime, looking forward to receiving your questions. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Thank you again. Goodbye.